Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, reaching out to the dead. After losing his fiancée to a tragic accident, Brett Wright set out on a personal journey to better understand what happens to us after we move to the other side. This journey and desire for answers led him to many respected professionals who all had their own accounts of interactions with those who have died, including the story of a young girl who attempted to prove or disprove a common legend about reversing a record. The legend of reversing a record to bring spirits into a home. This attempt quickly turned into a reality involving paralysis, dark forces, and other incidents that took over a home and its family members. This incident and many others soon enveloped the life of Brett and his quest to reach out to the dead.
I suppose, like a lot of people, I've always had an interest in the paranormal, but my interest was probably like many, more of a bump in the night, goosebumps kind of an interest. But having said that, about 10 years ago, my fiance passed away, and like a lot of people who lose someone, I mean, you start to question where has that person gone, and is that person okay? And that kind of got me looking more into the next life. I kind of refer to it more as the spirit world or the next life. So that's what really got me starting to investigate and starting to speak to people. And I suppose the more people I started to talk to, people came back with stories of incidents that they'd experienced that they couldn't explain. And, you know, being a police officer at the time, I talked to police officers and lawyers and magistrates, doctors. And some of the stories that these people would come back to me with, I found quite fascinating. And I guess being a police officer, we're trained to detect people's how truthful people are being. Mm-hmm. Use different methods like body language and things like that. And quite a lot of people that I spoke to, or in fact most people I spoke to, you could see that they were believing what they were telling you. It wasn't just a rehearsed story or something made up. It was something that they were recounting a lived event.
For you, was the belief in the paranormal, did it go back prior to the passing of your fiance, or did that kind of spark, as it would for anyone when they lose a loved one? You know, there's a desire there to wish you could have more communication, that could go on in some way, shape, or form. What was your thoughts on the paranormal prior to that tragic event happening in your life?
Yeah, well, Tony, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, I suppose anyone who goes through something similar, the first thing that you want to do is, you know, you want that person back, of course. It takes a long time to be able to move forward in life. So there's a big space there, a big time frame there of years where you want to have some sort of contact. You want to know that person is okay. But before that, before what happened to me, I've always had an interest. I've always had, I guess I've had a belief. I like to call myself a skeptic who believes, if that makes sense. I do believe, but I don't believe every story that I hear. You know, again, coming from an inquisitive background, I listen to people's stories and I ask questions, and I find that a lot of people, as I said, you know, people are reliving an experience. One of the things that people are reliving an experience, that leads towards truth, whereas some people, they'll talk to you about things they say in or that they experienced, and it's more a bit of a deadpan, just a recounting of a story. And sometimes some of those stories are not so believable. But yeah, no, I've always had an interest only in the paranormal. But as I said, it's for me before the accident that took my fiance away. My interest was like most people's interest, I suppose. You know, a bump in the night, a scary ghost story kind of an interest. But it's now developed into something far different to that. It's and where do our loved ones go? Where do people go when we leave this world? And yeah, I completely believe that that the spirit lives on in another realm. And I suppose I mentioned that in the book, and I talk about what I believe happens to our spirits once we pass over to the next life. And like I also say in my book, none of us are going to know. None of us have the exact answer because none of us have been there. We can all speculate what we think is going to happen, what we think the answers are, where we think we go. And that's certainly what I've done. That's what I've written about as part of this book. But none of us are going to know for sure until it's our time.
Sure. When you did begin to dive into this beyond just an interest, a general, hey, I've always kind of had an interest about this. This has been sparked here even more, through the passing of your fiance. What did you think you were going to be getting into at the beginning? Were you expecting a lot of people to be willing to share their stories? Did you have a preconceived notion of where this was going to go? Was a book in mind, or was it more of a personal journey?
Well, Tony, it was more of a personal journey. Now, as I'm sure many of your listeners will attest to, when you lose a loved one, you're looking for answers. You're looking for clarifications. I had a local minister who would come up to the house and speak to me, but he was very, very good. But whenever we started to, or I started to delve into the next life and things like that, he would always try and change the topic. So I got the impression fairly quickly that talking about the spirit world wasn't something that I was going to get any answers to there. So I didn't really go out originally talking to people about the next life and about where our loved ones go. But funnily enough, people would start to talk to me about their experiences. I guess people want to comfort someone when they see that someone is doing it tough and is struggling. And that brings people forward. And that is what happened to me. It brought people forward who wanted to start talking to me about experiences that they had when they had lost a loved one, things they couldn't quite explain. The more people that spoke to me about or started to tell me these stories, as time went by, I thought, look, these stories are very interesting. They should be written down somewhere. And for people who are going through traumatic time, through grief, through bereavement, these stories are stories that people who are going through those things are going to want to hear, because it gives a sense of comfort, it gives a sense of that person is okay. And again, as I said before, none of us have the answers. None of us will know exactly until our time comes where we go and what happens. But through talking to people and hearing these stories, a sense of, perhaps calmness isn't the right word, but a kind of a sense of happiness or acceptance that there is more going on in this life and the next life than what we understand. And when people started to hear that I was starting to document some stories, more people would come forward. And I spoke to a lot of people and did a lot of research too. Not all the stories in the book are people that I've interviewed, but plenty of them are more well-known stories from America, Australia, the United Kingdom, New Zealand. So the book covers a whole range of different types of stories, and some well known, some not so well known, some never documented before, obviously, from people that I interviewed. It also touches on the near death experiences, what people say that they have seen or experienced when they've had a near death experience, and I delve a little bit into the pros and the cons, or the arguments for near death experiences and the arguments against near death experiences. So I try to investigate a little bit in the book, and put forward arguments for both sides.
Sure. When you sat down with the priest and wanted to begin this conversation, you got that sense of you weren't going to get a lot of information. Were you getting a sense that he was holding back information that he didn't want to talk about? He didn't believe that there was the world of ghosts and just kind of sticking to the notion of heaven or hell, or what was the feeling you were getting from that priest when you had that conversation?
Yeah, the feeling was very much a misdirection, basically. So whenever I would try and talk about this next life experience, where we go and this kind of thing, talking about where my fiancée might be and all of those issues, the conversation was always directed into basically we don't talk about that, we don't touch on that in those kind of ways. It's more of we follow the Bible and at the end of days we'll all be raised up, this kind of thing.
So after you had the conversation and you kind of ran into the brick wall with the priest about this topic, where did you feel that you could go to get some answers? Was it just to start talking about people and their experiences? And I should ask, when you were in law enforcement as a police officer, let's maybe enter into that road a little bit. Were there any moments in your own career where you had some run-ins with either things yourself or from individuals where their story did not necessarily involve other human beings?
Well, so to answer the first question, Tony, I never went seeking to speak to people about their experiences. Again, people just approached me and started talking to me. And the more people that spoke to me, the more I started to think, you know what, I know that there's something in this, but there's probably a lot more in this than I originally thought there was, and that's when I started to speak to more people and say, look, and that's when I put it out there amongst, originally it was friends, different people in the police and things like that, to say, look, I'm starting to document some stories that I've been told, and if anyone knows of anyone else who's had encounters, feel free to tell me. And that's when more people started to come forward and tell me their encounters. And it was very interesting because, you come across people, of course, who say that they see ghosts everywhere, and I'm not disputing what people say that they see. But I found more interesting the people that would come forward with the story of, look, I saw this one thing, or I had this one thing happen, and I've never had anything before, and I've never had anything since. But this thing that happened, I've got no explanation for it. And I found those stories very interesting, Tony, because these were people who weren't saying they see spirits everywhere, this sort of thing. They were saying they did have an experience, but it was only the one experience, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for being in the job, being in the police, experiences that I had there, I had a couple of experiences that I can talk about. Probably the strangest one was, so in a police station I worked in at one stage of my career, we had a kind of a basement area, no windows or anything like that. It was on a level where not many people went down to, because there wasn't a lot of reason for people to go down to this level. And we had a big room in there. It was where we had a lot of exhibits from murder victims.
So this room was basically, evidence, physical evidence and filed evidence of unsolved murders. So a young officer had been asked to go downstairs and file some of the photos away. There's quite a lot of photos, and they were quite gruesome photos of a young lady who had been murdered. Now, I decided that I would go down and do that for the officer because he was only a young fella in the job, and I thought he doesn't need to see that. He'll see plenty of that later on. So I decided I'd go down there. So I went down to this, the exhibit room is what we called it. Now, this room, it's a completely sealed room. And I shut the door when I went in there, and there's no wind can get in there, no breeze. As I say, it's a completely sealed room. Now, as I was going through these folders and taking these photos out, I was trying not to look at the photos because, again, they're not very nice. They're quite disturbing. And I just said in my head, I just said a little thing in my head, look, I don't mean any disrespect by not looking at these photos. I'm not trying to be disrespectful here at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I was saying that to the spirit of the lady, if she could see me, if she could see what was going on. Now, as I was putting these photos into another folder, as I was filling up one folder, I'd put that folder on top of a filing cabinet that was sitting next to me, and I'd lay them down flat, so they weren't sitting up on an edge. I'd lay them down flat on the top of the filing cabinet. As I'm doing this, and very shortly after I had said, this little thing in my head about I'm not trying to be disrespectful, I put one of these folders up, open up the next folder. That folder has fallen off the filing cabinet next to me. Now, there is no way that this folder could have fallen off the top of that filing cabinet. If you can imagine, it's a big flat space. It's a big heavy folder. It was lying down flat on top of it. There's nothing on the top of this filing cabinet to push the folder off. There's no way of it falling off. I actually climbed up on the desk that I was working on so that I could see on top of the filing cabinet completely to see was there something on top of the filing cabinet that had made it fall off. Nothing there, just a completely flat surface. So when you asked me earlier if I had had any experiences in the police, in the job, that I couldn't quite explain, I certainly couldn't explain that. There's no logical explanation as to how that folder came off the top of the filing cabinet. It had to be pushed off there. There's no one else in the room. It's only me. There's no wind. There's no windows. So that was a very strange incident. And it startled me a little bit. Needless to say, once I finished doing that photo, I left the room. I locked the door, and I didn't go back down there for a little while.
with something like that, do you ever wonder if maybe there was some reason that got knocked over? That did you ever look back on that incident and go, maybe I should have looked at that folder in closer detail? Maybe something was trying to tell me something.
As far as a message goes, was there a message trying to come through to me? Look, I didn't really think of it like that. I think I more thought of it at the time, like whether it was the young lady whose photos I was filing away, or like I said, this room was a room full of exhibits from different unsolved murders, whether it was somebody else, some other spirit who had, for whatever reason, pushed that folder off the top of the filing cabinet just to let me know that they were around. I really don't know. I never felt like it was a message trying to say, look at these photos, you're going to see something. I never got a feeling like that. It was more just a, guess what, I'm here. But whether it was that young lady or another spirit, I don't know. But as I said, there is no logical explanation as to how this folder could have fallen off the top of the filing cabinet. It just, I can't explain it. I simply cannot explain that one.
Sure. It just occurred. It's just kind of one of those things.
Look, another incident that happened to me in the police was, again, it was going into an exhibit room where there was a lot of, it was a different exhibit room. It was an old police station, a disused police station now. And it had some old cells in it. These are old cells with heavy iron doors, the way they were back in the 1800s. Quite bleak, and would have been quite horrible to have been locked up in those days, as it is today too, I suppose, but far bleaker conditions back then. But anyway, in one of these old disused prison cells, we had a lot of exhibits, again, from a couple of unsolved murders. Now, myself and two other officers were cleaning out this exhibit, this space once, taking a whole lot of the exhibits out to actually sent to Sydney in Australia where they were going to be stored. Now, I was in this room and the other two officers were out in a big courtyard area. And as I'm coming out of this room with a box with exhibits in it, I felt these distinct touches on my head. And I stopped and I looked up and, you know, was there a cobweb hanging off the ceiling that touched me on the head or something like that? There was nothing there. There was absolutely nothing there, but I distinctly felt these touches on the top of my head. So, again, things that I can't explain, you know, what was that? What caused that? So, yeah, just more things that I are interesting. Interesting.
Sure. Things that you can't really put an answer to, but obviously all kind of tie in together when looking at the bigger picture.
Well, when you're going into a room like that, which has got unsolved murder exhibits in it, and you know, again, you wonder, is somebody there? Is it making contact? Are they just questions? Just more questions.
So as you then later on began to think about going on this personal journey of trying to get some answers for yourself after the passing of your fiance, and then as it progressed, it slowly turned into this concept for a book. What were some of those stories that you were coming across personally before you dug into some of the more broad-based national stories or worldwide stories that you uncovered?
Oh, look, there's quite a lot of stories in the book, the personal accounts that people disclosed to me. I think one of the longest ones is a woman that I worked with in one of the police stations, and she told me of stories that an ongoing story that her and her family had experienced many, many years ago when they moved into an old house with a shop front on it. That they renovated and they were doing up and they were living in this old house and they were turning the shop front into a florist. And she had actually, because it had such an impact on her life, she had written her own story basically about this, about these incidents that had happened in this house, and she gave me that. It was just a whole lot of files that she gave me and said, look, you know, have a look through this, and if you think it's worthy of the book, you know, she'd love for me to put it in the book. And I did. I went through it, and there was a lot of information, a lot of incidents that happened to her and to her family. And she ended up being a lady that I got to know quite well as a work colleague and a friend. And she very firmly believed the incidents that had happened to her and to her family, the things that they had experienced in this house. Mucking around with a record player, you know, the old story that if you put a record on a record player and you turn it backwards, voices will come out of the record. Well, that was one of the first things that they actually experienced. A couple of the young girls in the family had done this, and it had caused all sorts of dramas in their house, and they weren't sure if, had what they did by receiving these messages through the backward turned record, had that brought a spirit into the house, or had the spirit already been there? So that was a very interesting story. Again, a quite in depth and quite long story.
Yeah. I'd love to hear more details of that specific story. So they put a record on, and obviously, if no one's ever done this before, or you reverse audio in any way, shape, or form, you get a rather unsettling sound out of it, which by itself can sound unsettling. But the urban legend or myth or whatever you want to call it, if you will, of reversing it, of that having some sort of a power. What exactly happened? Well, go into some detail on that story. Obviously, this is someone who you trusted. This is someone who has, is in a position, professionally of respect and of trust. What exactly occurred in that home after they reversed that record? What were some of the highlights of that experience? Feel free to go into detail.
Yeah, sure. So what was actually happening, what started to happen as they were doing it, as they were turning the record in reverse, the light suddenly went out. There was a very oppressive feeling came straight into the room. This happened a couple of times because they were young girls at the time, and they mucked around with this the first time, and one of the girls almost went into a state of paralysis. She just couldn't move. It was quite terrifying. The other family member screamed out, and other family members came running from the house. Once the door was opened, it was, you know, the feeling went away and the lights came back on. And these sort of things kept happening. Things would disappear in the house and suddenly reappear. Now we all have the times that we misplace an item and we find it somewhere else and we think, oh, Lord, I just did that by mistake. But these were far more strange occurrences when these things would happen. In the shop front one night, because as I said, the house was, it had a shop front on it. One of the ladies was working in the shop front one night and there were footsteps in the shop area. There was no one there. The doors were locked, but there was clearly footsteps. She walked into the around the counter and into the area where she could hear the footsteps, and she was trying to find a solution for these footsteps. There was nothing there, but a feeling of terror came onto this lady. Again, she almost felt paralyzed with fear. She couldn't move until she was able to just scream out, and then again, family members came running from another section of the house and the feeling went away. My friend who originally told me this, who gave me the documents for this story, she told me about a night that she was in her room and a picture on her wall started to rattle. Windows weren't open. There was no reason for this picture to rattle. So she got up out of bed and she was looking at this picture. Why is this picture rattling on the wall? Why is it banging on the wall? Then the radio in the room turned on. But the problem with the radio was it was an old radio that didn't work and it wasn't plugged in, but it started to work. Now, it terrified her. And again, she called out. Family members came running in. It went away. Lots of these stories, lots of these incidents that happened to to this lady who gave me this information and other family members, just it went on for a long time, and it basically went on until they left the house. When they left the house, they didn't leave the house because of the occurrences. They kind of got used to the occurrences, but they sold the business because different family members were living in the house and they all decided they were going to go their separate ways. People that came into the house who bought the house from them, they tried to tell these people, we've got to tell you before you make the purchase that there's something here, there's a spirit here. So what ended up happening to that spirit or in that house after they left, I don't know. But they certainly had some very unsettling experiences over a period of quite a few years.
It's interesting because you have to look at that sort of inactivity of reversing a record. Was it truly the reversing of the record that brought that in, or was it more so the intent of doing that, that we were playing with this and we're believing that this is what the action that needs to be taken to bring the entity in will have, and then by doing so, it will bring it in. It makes you wonder if they believed that if they would break a jar onto the floor, that would bring an entity in, if the same thing would happen. If it's not so much really truly the activity, it's more so the intent behind the activity that brings it in, that you have to wonder about. And obviously it's one of those questions that we will never truly know the answers to.
Tony, they actually did some research, and now this is quite a long time ago, before we had the luxury of internet searches and Google searches and all this sort of thing. They actually, because it was something that was affecting the whole family, something they were all experiencing, so they actually did some research. They went to a local library, and this is in the days more of microfilm, so newspapers and things like that, and they, through a lot of research, they actually found out that an elderly lady had passed away in the home. Her husband had died years before that, and she had had a fall. I think that's what the story was now. I'm trying to rack my memory because it's a little while ago since I read over the story, but she had a fall, and the ambulance came and took her away, but she had passed away. And they wondered very much if the spirit was that lady. They didn't so much get the feeling that it was a male spirit. They got the feeling it was a female spirit. So what they came to be comfortable with was that it was the spirit of this this elderly lady. And once they came to an understanding with that, it made them a lot more comfortable. So
sure. And that's interesting because sometimes, I mean, quite frequently when someone experiences the paranormal in their home, they're going to search for answers. They want to know who it was. Oftentimes the conclusion is jumped to of whoever died in the house must be the answer. And if that provides some comfort, that's good. As long as it doesn't go too dark and they start wondering, well, that's quite out of character for the old elderly woman to be, you know, killing our pets. Not that that happened, but...
Well, we don't want that. No, we don't want that. But look, again, she was a well, she still is a police officer. This lady, and she had an inquisitive mind, even as a as a teenager.
Sure.
That's what led her and other family members to go to the library and to research and to find out what they could find out. And again, back in those days, it wasn't quite so easy as what it is today to find out different pieces of information. But yeah, that's what they found out about the old lady and her husband. So interesting.
It is very interesting. Now, in this book, you cover other individuals who are from other professions of respect that take a lot of education, that are not just someone off the street who, you know, may have some issues that's spouting a ghost story, lawyers, doctors and such. Tell me about some of those stories. Let's jump into some of the stories that you've uncovered from some lawyers that involve their interactions with the paranormal.
Yeah, sure. Well, there's one in particular, a lawyer that I got to know quite well. And when I told him that I was researching this book, so this is going back a number of years now, and I said, look, I'm researching, doing some research. And he said, look, I've got a story to tell you. So he, very successful lawyer, quite a big business that he owns and runs. And he told me that, so where their office is these days, it's an old bank. So it's a renovated building, but originally it served as an old bank, a three-story building.
Mm-hmm.
And he would say that at night or of an evening sometimes when the rest of the staff had gone home and he would stay back to be working on cases and this sort of thing, that he would hear footsteps down in the lower area. He could never explain these footsteps. He would go downstairs, and he wasn't someone who believed in the paranormal or the spirit world. His mind didn't go down that track. It was more, what's the logical explanation? And there was a bathroom on that lower level, and he said that sometimes he would go and use that bathroom on that level after people had gone home, and he could hear what to him sounded like a lady in high heels walking up and down the concrete corridor outside the bathroom. He said he never got a feeling of fear or being in any way afraid, but he would swing the door open, look around, there was never anybody there. And another occasion in that same building, he was on a stairwell with one of his female employees, and they were chatting about a case, and a gust of wind came racing up the stairs, and only for a couple of seconds, and then it was gone. This lawyer, he had these experiences in the basement, and he had these thoughts that maybe there's something going on that I don't understand. The lady he was talking to had no idea about this. He didn't tell her because she's an employee. He didn't want to scare her, but he wondered, she was a bit freaked out by this gust of wind that came out of nowhere. And he thought, that made him think even more about, is there something more going on here than my logical thought process is understanding.
That wraps up part one of our interview with Brett Wright about reaching out to the dead. Was it difficult to get respected professionals such as doctors, lawyers, and law enforcement to share their stories of run-ins with the deceased? Why did Brett's doctor ask him if his deceased fiance had visited him after her passing? What sort of experiences did Brett's doctor have with the paranormal that he couldn't explain? Did Brett's fiancée ever make herself known from the other side? And why do some people have encounters with loved ones who have passed on and others do not? Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.